I am Doug Friedman.
I am Kenzie Genest.
And this is Your Mental Breakdown,
the podcast.
With us.
Me. And?
You.
You.
Oh, you.
Oh,
and
I'm
me?
I am me. And you are you. And we are all together.
Wow.
Thank you.
I like the Beatles reference.
Thank you. Thank you. I've had two Beatles references today.
Really?
Yeah. First on the podcast, though.
Oh,
this
right.
One.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, how did I miss a Beatles reference?
Right. I'm not as stupid as you might think. Until we talk about John Adams and the presidents.
Oh, my gosh. You just schooled me on this. I was like, wait, John Adams? You mean John Quincy Adams? Like, that's his father.
Okay. It was actually really validating for me that you did not know that, because no. I didn't know that before going into watching John Adams, the HBO series from early 2000s that my partner is subjecting me to right now. You know, I'm a millennial, and I was like, I don't need to watch this. I don't need to know about early American history. Like, it's fine. And Troy was like, ew, it's so important. Like, you need to know these things. It's basic American history. And I decided to really test myself. I went through all the lists of, well, the one list of all of the American.
All the lists of all the presidents.
All the different lists of different presidents.
Well, presidents by age, presidents by height, presidents
okay,
by...
you're right. Yeah,
I'm
it could
sure
have been a thing.
That.
But
yeah.
This was one list of all the presidents of the United States.
Chronologically?
Chronologically.
Uh-huh.
Doug, I'm sad to admit it. I didn't know a fourth of those people's names.
But here's the thing. It's, I think, fairly unnecessary to remember because it's at our fingertips.
Thank
you. We can look it up anywhere.
Right.
And is it really a part of our history to know the presidents?
There are more important things, I think, about our history.
Sure.
So I don't think I need to know all these white men's names, you know? White man's
well,
names? White men's names.
What about Barack Obama?
Well, I know his name.
He's
and he's
not white.
White. Yeah, that's why I know his name. See what I did there? Yeah.
Right. Yep, yep.
Yeah. I'm much more involved in like the stories of the people. Like I always, even watching John Adams, I'm like, give me more of the wife and him and their dynamic. And like, I just want to see the couples and the relationships and their kids and like all these things. I don't really care about the history part or the politics when it's just the two men talking in the courtroom. I'm like zoning out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got into it late, but I watched the show Succession.
Oh, yes. Yep.
Right?
Partner's obsessed with that one, too.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
I was late to that. Didn't make it on that boat. Yeah.
Wait, one of you was late to Game of Thrones. Which one was it?
My partner.
Right. You were on
that.
He
was late. Yeah. I was very much on time for Game of Thrones, and now I have watched it all the way through twice.
Wow.
Yes.
And what about the prequel
House
show?
Of the Dragon?
Yeah.
Seen it twice. We just
twice.
Watched it again. Yep.
Wow.
It's so good.
But that one's not done. Game of Thrones is done.
Game of Thrones is done and over. House of Dragon season two is coming, I think, next summer.
I thought winter is coming.
Oh, fuck. I'm a bad fan.
Oh, man. You know what I'm a fan of?
What?
Therapy.
Oh, my God. Me too. We have something in common.
And guess what? We have another question from a listener.
Oh, we do. You
we
didn't
do.
Prep me for this one, Doug. Right? Thanks a lot.
No, I did prep you. I did have an agenda going into this question.
Oh, right.
See?
Oh, you just prompted my memory.
Uh-huh,
thank you.
Uh-huh.
Okay, yeah, I'm back. I'm back. I'm here.
So the question we got was, do you go into a session with an agenda? Forgive me, I can't remember where we got that question or who asked it.
Because you made it up. Yeah, you made it up.
I had an agenda.
You submitted it yourself.
I had an agenda. We needed a question for this episode.
Yeah.
Here it is.
Just need filler.
No, we got, but this is an old one that we got.
It's a good question.
It is a good question. And I will turn it over to you first. Then I will give the correct answer.
Right. I was just about to say, just flail me out here and just make me look like a fool again.
I don't have to do that.
You don't have to. I'll do it all on my own. You're right. Oh my God. Okay. So here we go. I'm collecting myself, collecting my thoughts. Agenda. So no, I do not go. I think I used to when I first started being a therapist, right? Like in practicum, I definitely would look at my previous notes. I would look at my treatment plan and my case conceptualization. Like I was very meticulous about like, okay, this is what we should talk about today. Let's follow up on this thing.
Yep.
And then of course I'd get there and none of that would happen, right?
Right.
Like maybe
right.
we would start with that and then just all shit would hit the fan, right? Like anything goes. It's therapy. I quickly learned that you can't go in with an agenda. Maybe not a step-by-step agenda. I think that it is maybe an ethical and responsible thing to do as a therapist, to kind of like look at your notes from last time, see what the through line is, or like what you're working on, like their goals, right? And definitely have that in mind. So I always keep that in mind when I'm going into a session. And I have things that, like, you know, God forbid they have nothing to talk about, right? Which never happens. But if it does, you know, I do have questions or things that I want to ponder with them or explore. But yeah, more often than not, I just let them lead and I end up kind of connecting it to the central theme of their stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What about when clients come in and they go, oh, I don't even know what to talk about. I almost felt like not coming in today.
Ooh, okay. I haven't had that last part yet, but I knock on wood.
Give it time, you will.
Yeah, oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. I'm still in the phase of therapy where I'm experiencing all the firsts. Right. I'm getting my firsts, you know, we're not going to get into all of that. My shame. No. So if someone came in, I don't even know what to talk about today. Okay, cool. Yeah. Like, this is what I do, and maybe it's my kind of anxiety, but I will say, okay, well, I'll just like throw some stuff at the wall, see if it sticks, you know, and just like, I'll reflect maybe some stuff from last week. Like, this is what we talked about last week.
Yep.
Maybe some of that stuff is coming up again this week. Maybe not. I don't know. Like, how are you feeling, you know? And it's just kind of loose, but I've kind of given them some options, right? Of like, these are things we've talked about, some themes. What seems to be on your mind? What keeps coming up for you this week? And usually I ask too, just like, how's it been since our last session? You know, just to kind of like plug in that, like, since the last session, because, ooh, what did we talk about in that last session? That's kind of how I go about it. I would love to know how you go about it.
The exact same way.
Tell me
now,
the right
getting
answer.
To the session. Oh, wait. Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Oh, wait. Ding, ding, ding.
Actually, absolutely. Like everything you said. I pretty much agree.
No way. Do I get a gold star?
Way.
Oh my God.
You do. In fact.
Oh my God, you guys. He has actual gold stars. You've been holding out on me.
I do have gold stars. There we go. There they are. Here we go. Here's the gold.
Oh, thank you.
It's
so shiny.
I do actually have gold stars, and I have given gold stars to clients before.
You do, which is... Right.
It's true.
Can we
it's
talk
true.
About that?
I do. We could, but let me answer your other question first. I don't go into a session with an agenda. Just like you said, though, I will sometimes, not as diligently as when I was a newer therapist, but I will look at or think about where we were last session, what we were talking about. Is there a through line or a theme that I want to keep going, that I want to build on? And let me absolutely check in with where they are right now.
Yeah.
I don't want to just launch into where we were last week, but I like that idea of, so how's it been since last week or since our last session? Because that's a way to invite the present and connect it to what you've been doing, right?
Yeah.
And clients are generally paying us a lot of money to do this. So we should do some prep and remember where we were last week and prompt them if we need to. I do think a lot of clients like having some chit chat at the beginning. They don't want to just jump right into it. They want a little primer or something.
Yeah, warm up.
Yeah, kind of like how we're doing this. It's like the cold open. We need to warm up to the cold open.
Yep.
And then there we go.
Yeah.
So I'll do some of that. I do have themes of the week. And it's just a theme that seems to keep coming up in therapy. So I'll hold that in my head.
Oh.
And if what the client and I are talking about hits it, I'll go, whoa, like there's been a theme this week of there's a lot of this going around.
Huh.
And they like that because it's, oh, so I'm not the only one feeling this right now.
Yeah, it's like a universality kind of thing.
Totally.
Like, look at us, all us humans just suffering together.
Yep. And that there earns you a gold star. No, I will. But I will say that I do keep gold stars.
I've heard you do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of times why I do that is similar to what we were talking about, I think a week or two ago with Sarah, about seeing if she can give herself permission for something, seeing if she can be the one. So I'll do that to show, oh, they've earned this because they're looking to earn something, but eventually I'm going to have them doing it. And they will say, oh, you'd be so proud of me. Or, oh, I had a gold star moment or this.
Yeah, yeah.
So I am actually physically marking something with something that reminds us of childhood, right? Or being childlike, right?
Yeah.
And then they start being the ones that administer it, not me. Remember, me as a therapist, I am sort of the reflection of them.
I was just thinking about that because you said that, I think, a couple of weeks ago about how you know, if a client comes to you saying, you'd be so proud of me right now, what that really says is they're so proud of themselves.
Exactly.
And that's awesome. Exactly.
Given the gold star, or sometimes I'll call it like, hey, let's have a pop the cork moment, like celebrate something in your life.
Yeah.
Then they will come back to me going, hey, we had a pop the cork moment this week. It was really nice. I'm like, that's awesome. I love when people do this and see this. And well, here's a segue, because that's kind of where Sarah started out in this session, which you guys will hear in a second. If you've been listening along, you know what we do here. We listen to Sarah in therapy, Drew in therapy. You get to follow along. You get to listen along. Then we'll come back and break it down. And if you have a question for us, hit us up at info@yourmentalbreakdown.com. Find us on social media on where, Kenzie?
The TikTok or YouTube or, oh my God, I can't even list social media. Facebook. Yeah. Facebook. Yeah. That's one.
One more.
Instagram.
There it is.
That's the big one.
Yep.
I got
you
there.
You can find us anywhere you find anybody.
Yeah. You can Google it.
Google it.
Why not? We're not going like there. I'm stopping it.
Well, then that's a perfect time to segue
to
our session. We will be back with you in a little bit.
Woohoo. See you then.
Bye.
The four of us sisters were hanging out for the first time in probably 15 years, where it wasn't a whole family reunion. Like it was just the four of us.
Wow. How was that?
It was good. It was interesting. They all made a comment. They say, you know, we've all noticed how you're so much more calm. You know, there's not a lot of angst around you as much as before. So, of course, I was like, therapy. But I also think there's something to be said about the right therapist. To me, this is as long as you are around or you'll be my therapist, like, I'm not going anywhere. There's plenty for me to keep exploring and to keep learning. And I think it's healthy. But trying to convince someone of that, that's not, you know, that's only ever had either not very great experiences with therapists or only use them as a 911.
Right.
It's hard to relay that to them, you know, to tell them about the journey.
It's interesting. And I appreciate you saying that, because I think that's you recognizing your own growth, which is tremendous. I love hearing that. And that's not just you working hard, doing a thing. It's you processing a lot of this emotional stuff and mental stuff and thinking differently and experimenting and really doing it.
Over the course of the time we've spent together, it's slowly started to teach me that you can't approach wellness with an agenda.
It's hard to convey that to somebody, but it also requires you being willing to change and willing to look at things. And the way you have been doing the work is, I want to live differently.
I didn't look at therapy that way either before. And I think it's also hard to get anybody excited about therapy until they're ready in their own heart.
Oh, yeah. I think you really recognized in some way that what got you this far was no longer serving you. So yeah, that really was you really wanting to make a change. At the year mark, I love like kind of just saying to a client, let's treat your next session like it's your first session. Because where you are a year into therapy is a lot different from when you first came. Where you are now is so different than where you were for you 9 months ago. Right. And it's something that you got the reflection of that from your sisters and saw that, because they can see it very clearly. It's not like, cool, I got through this, now I'm good, thanks. It's no, I am constantly growing and I'm and evolving, and I want to keep doing that. And that's partly your nature. You know, you're a good fit for the kind of therapy that we're doing.
You know what's something funny I've noticed is the more I start to live in this path of life with, you know, less anxiety, less stress, just all the things we've been focusing on and all the things I've been putting into practice, the more tired I am. It's almost like all my nervous energy is going away. Is that normal?
Yes.
I feel like it's been keeping me going all these years, just like zoom, 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 zoom.
I think I've said this to you before, the Scooby-Doo effect, which is, if you remember me saying this, it's, you know, you've seen Scooby-Doo enough to know when Scooby and Shaggy, the, you know, the tall dude and the dog, mm-hmm. when they get scared, they take off, but their skins are still there. And it takes a while for that to catch up to them, right? So this is the catch-up effect. This is you catching up to you, in a sense, right? And it's, is that normal? Yeah, extremely normal, because your system has been operating in an acute stress response for a long time. That's that fight or flight mechanism, right? Yeah. And when we're in that mechanism, our adrenal system is way up because we need to be on high alert at all times. So to finally get to a place where you can start shutting that down, you realize how tired you've been for so long. There's something about this that I think has an incredible benefit to not just you, but the people around you. And maybe your sisters, seeing them, I don't think this is accurate, but go with me here, was a little bit frustrating. Yeah. On the other hand, we have, at the very least, daughter. I don't know about son. Not sure about boyfriend. I know he sees it, but daughter, she's benefiting. She's seeing her mom different. She's getting different modeling. She is becoming different too.
And she seems to be calming as well, almost as like she can feel that my anxiety level has lowered. Yeah. So it's not feeding hers.
Yeah. You're modeling something different for them, you know, just by virtue of you being different and evolving and making changes. Tell me a little bit about boyfriend and you guys. We haven't really talked too much about the relationship and how that is for you.
I think the calmer I get, the better we get. The issue was always that I would try and make him join me in my stress bubble.
Yeah.
And that's just not who he is. Right. So that would frustrate me. Like, well, you don't understand. Like, did you not just hear what I told you? And he'd be like, no, I heard it. I would get even more anxious because I would think that he didn't care or whatever. But now it's like with my own mind and heart and nerves shifting, I'm starting to see a lot more where he's coming from. In fact, last night he was just like, oh, it's so nice to see you just laying here with daughter, just hanging out and not running around the house and cleaning and doing all this stuff. It's really an overall shift. Even with son asked me how was work, I did stop and think about what we had discussed. Right. It didn't roll off the tongue naturally.
Sure.
But I did change it a little bit and I did give him details. I was like, you know what? It was so much fun because I basically got to train this new girl for almost the whole day. So that, you know, and I told him and I was like, that was so much fun for me, but it was nice. I shared, like you said, or you had suggested, actually give them a little bit of your day. You know, don't go crazy. Don't go into everything. And then I was like, you know, but I'm always happy to be home. So that part wasn't entirely, like, I felt like I was making myself do it, but it didn't feel wrong or unnatural. It just felt like, okay, this is a muscle I'm going to try and flex for a little while and see how this goes.
I love this for you, Sarah. There's a couple of things I want to highlight here. The first thing that I'll highlight, which is huge, you said, well, you know, I thought a lot about, you know, last week, what you said, well, what you suggested, that correction, right? Yep. And you're nodding. You know where I'm going with this? Gimme, hit it for me.
You don't actually tell me what I should and shouldn't do. You point me in a direction, but it's funny because I said the same thing to my sister. So like, I really want to sit there and just have someone tell me oh, you need to do this in order to do that. And I'm like, well, if you have the right therapist, they don't actually tell you shit. They mirror.
I'm the mirror for you to see your own reflection.
But I don't know if I was right about them. If that was what you were asking.
Okay, hang on, pause. What was that correction right there?
Well, you had asked me a question, and I didn't know if I had answered it correctly. In the sense of like what you, where you were going with it.
It's not about correcting you. It's not about right or wrong. I don't tell you what to do. I mean, I could try, but no. And that would be horribly traumatic, even if you didn't recognize it as such. If I was just telling you what to do and you were doing it, that would be a lot of what you've done a lot of your life. It's not about, did I answer that correctly? It's, this is my experience. You're explaining your experience to me as I reflect it back to you. You giving myself permission to try this out, to look at it this way. It's, you know, he's not telling me anything. He's giving me a suggestion and I can think about it and I'll process it and I'll try it out and see how that goes. And if I like it, I'll do more. But there's something that needs to come out of you. You're going to find the way for that to happen when it feels natural. You're not making corrections because I'm the one that's telling you what's right or wrong. And we are not, we are way fucking not under David Berg's spell, you know, at all. And for a lot of your life, that's what was going on.
Yeah.
Well, for the early part of your life and for people around you.
I love that you said it like that, because for me in my old, you know, my other life, when I was younger, we weren't given any kind of freedom to extrapolate our interpretation as I've been a grown up. The best way I learn actually is from watching and listening other people's. Like when you tell me stories, those are some of my biggest light bulb moments. You validate, and in fact, sometimes even go further, you know, like this is a trauma response or you're a trauma survivor.
Right.
But the way that you did it sort of allowed me to start feeling those emotions and therefore learning my quote unquote own lessons in a sense. So I'm hearing you and I'm hearing your stories and I'm hearing your guidance, but I never feel like you're telling me, if you don't want to be like this, you need to do this. So that's wonderful.
I'll tell you another kid story of one that I worked with. There was a girl I worked with and she had an abusive household for a while. And we'd been working together for a little bit. And there was a poster on her wall. He peeled it off the wall and showed me that there was a crack in the wall. You know, whatever it was trauma. It wasn't like a huge dent in the wall, but it was a crack. And it was something that she was an artist and, you know, loved to draw. I got her a sketchbook and she would do charcoal sketches on the book.
Okay.
And I got her the frame and I said, you know, we're going to create your own picture that incorporates this crack, because the crack is not your entire story, but it's part of you. I don't want it covered up. I want to see if we can own it as just a part of our story. And she had created this like, it, I always think of it as like a weeping willow. It was like a tree with geometric designs on it. And it was really, really cool. And I could see where the crack was because I knew it was there. She could probably see where it was too, because she knew it was there. But when we put the frame on, you just looked at it. It was this beautiful piece of artwork.
I love that whole concept of, like you've said from the beginning, you know, we can't change what happened to you. We can't go back and protect little Sarah from that. But what we can do is we can change the picture. I love that. And there's beauty about not completely camouflaging it, but creating a whole beautiful picture.
You know, you described it as beautiful. You said that you loved it. I want to hold those two words, beautiful and love, for a second here. Why I told that story again is right now where you are in your therapy, in your life, in your growth, is you are actively creating that piece of art on the wall. You are, in a sense, drawing yourself. That's what you just experienced with your sisters, how I am with them. That's what you're doing with your daughter. I'm going to say your words back to you. What you're doing and how you're living, Sarah, is beautiful and you love it.
I do. And yes, I agree. But at the beginning, I was so worried that getting into some of my past life shit was going to make me start going crazy and start being depressed and having outbursts. And there was so much like concern. I mean, I will go as far as anxiety. I was so worried I would turn into a crazy person when I started remembering or going back into these dark places. But I don't feel like that is what has been happening at all.
Right.
I feel like we're doing exactly what you just told me about in that story. That crack is for sure there, and it's not going away because we don't have the money to fix it or whatever the case. But why not make it something beautiful? I love it. I love that you validated that for me, because that was really my trauma around the word or the sentence trauma survivor.
Right.
That I didn't want that to be who I was. So I appreciate that you make that distinction. I think my trauma actually played a huge part in some of my best strengths.
You know, when I mentioned that stress response, the fight, flight, freeze, or fawn, you know, whichever one we do, and you've probably heard me say this before too, but that response that we go into comes from, you know, escaping danger, getting away from a threat. You know, there's a predator after me. I don't want to be the prey. For you, that fight or flight system response is what you've been in. And if you're in the wild and a predator's chasing you, you will run flat out for as long as it takes. Your system will do that so you can survive. It's still a great defense mechanism and a superpower that you have that we talked about. You'll calibrate it because you can decide when to turn it on and when not to.
Yeah. And I'm starting to notice in my brothers and sisters kind of how I was, I think, when I first came to you. I've come to appreciate the fact that there really is no quick fix. There isn't, because there's no one thing I can look at and say, okay, if I do this differently, then everything's going to be different. It's a state of mind and body and heart and calm versus, like you say, attack mode or, you know, hyper-vigilant mode.
Right. We've talked about before that your brothers and sisters have gone through the same thing, but have a very different perspective and experience of it. They've gone through it through their eyes, their way, their body.
On so many levels, we are all so different.
Right.
The only, the only sort of underlying thing I see is all of our strong will in how we have survived is what we had. There was so many things that sort of just fell into place. And I feel like it was life, like finally giving me a break in the sense that I'm not the person that's like, oh, everything always works out for me exactly the way I want it. I told you I'm a worst case scenario always. So yes, it's been a huge blessing.
And we're back.
Hello. I feel like a news anchor.
Hello. Welcome back.
Well, you know, we were just talking about you can't go into sessions with an agenda, right?
Right.
Or at least not a strict agenda.
Yep.
And it's so relevant because Sarah, on her own volition, says you can't approach wellness with an agenda, something that she has realized.
Right.
But I would say that you kind of have to be willing and open to change, right? And I think you mentioned this in the session. You can't go in with an agenda per se, which I know she tried to do in the beginning, right? Which is so Sarah, it makes sense.
Well, and she said, there was a reason I was coming to you, right? I wanted this.
Yeah.
So can you help me with this? Can you do this? So people do come in with an agenda and they should.
Yeah.
That's okay.
That's true. You want to have some goals and like, what do you want from
this? For sure. Like, oh, what brings you to therapy? I don't know. I just heard it was good.
Well, I do have a client like that who came in because their partner wanted them to get a therapist, and it has morphed into something completely different from what they thought they were coming in for because they had no goals in the beginning.
That's cool.
They were just here. Yeah. And now it's turned into a huge part of her life. I mean, a huge thing where we have very specific goals and things she's working on.
I love that. Yeah. I find a lot of times when clients come in, whatever they're coming in for, it's just what brings them here.
Right. But we're going to get into some other stuff probably because it'll come up.
And that's why that idea of, oh, well, it's an ongoing thing. I mean, she says that towards the end, like there's plenty to keep exploring and keep learning. And I think, you know, it's a healthy thing to just keep doing this. You know, it's not just like when it's a 911 call like that, or she was saying that to her.
Yeah, her family, which we'll get to too, because that was actually the first thing I wanted to ask you, like, you know, because she's saying her sisters and everybody are kind of noticing the effects, or I guess the change that she's gone through, right, and the progress she's made.
Right.
And I can tell, or she's literally saying, obviously, like, she wants them to go to therapy, you know, she wishes she could just convince her family to go to therapy.
Sure.
And this is something that I think we can all relate to, right? Like, once we're in therapy for a good amount of time and we start making progress, you start to see the flaws of everything around you. Like, you have the awareness of, oh, wow, they could really use some therapy, right? And I think we can get a little too far with that and just be like assigning everyone, oh, you should go to therapy, right? But you know, for the most part, I think if you can afford it and you want to go, like, sure, go.
Well, afford it financially, but also the time that it takes to do
it. Yeah, the commitment.
And the investment in yourself and the commitment to it. You're absolutely right. I think there's something in the beginning of the therapeutic process for clients where they kind of go, oh, wait, I'm seeing behind the curtain.
Yeah.
Wow, and they're like this and they're like that. And oh, that explains it. That's why a lot of people get interested in psychology, because it starts to explain some of the things that we just think are human. And I remember a huge revelation for me was when I would hear about these celebrities, whether they were actors or well, we didn't have influencers when this was coming up, but people that were just acting so like bizarre, you go, oh my God, what's wrong with them? Why would they do that? Mm-hmm. And you're thinking, at least I was, logically, why would somebody choose to do that thing?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it was, whether it's like Britney Spears shaving her head.
Right. Oh, that's crazy.
Right.
It's like, just who like, would do that?
Or some artist like Van Gogh chopping off his ear, you know, whatever it might have been. Mm-hmm. I wasn't around for that one, but whatever. No, not quite.
Okay.
Whatever it was that they were doing, there's oftentimes a psychological explanation for what was going on.
Or even just a contextual argument for it. Like, there was always reasons, psychological, emotional, social, like cultural, so many reasons for why people are doing what they're doing.
One of the things I talk about a lot, and we've talked about this too, is the show The Big Bang Theory, right? That's Meredith and I used to talk about this a lot. She loved that show.
Okay, I was going to say, you didn't talk to me about it because I've never seen that show. I've never seen that show.
Wow.
Yeah. My dad loves it though.
Right, there you go. So the show all pretty much centers around this one genius character named Sheldon Cooper.
I know the general premise, I think.
Who is so quirky and bizarre and off-putting, and everybody's like trying to organize their lives around him because he's so particular about things. He's on the autism spectrum.
I was going to say, is he autistic? Yeah.
They never say that on the show.
Oh.
The only thing that they say is, oh God, you're so crazy. No, I'm not. My mom had me tested. Okay, but A, did she really? And B, what kind of test? Because he's clearly on the spectrum.
Yeah.
And if people knew, hey, this guy's brilliant. He's a little quirky because he's on the spectrum. So you got to understand this, this, and this about him.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
I think if we just shed the stigma of a lot of these mental, I don't even want to say issues, mental disorders, mental, whatever you want to call them, like things that people have, right? Like,
well, it's that's mental health. It doesn't have to be mental illness. It's just mental health. And if you understand, this is just a part of mental health.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if we just shed that stigma, then like, maybe we would empathize and understand people a little bit more.
And bringing it back to Sarah, is very much the way she is because of the trauma she's gone through as a kid and how she's had to defend herself and the systems of defense that she's built for herself consciously and unconsciously. And as she's starting to look at it and understand it and make different choices with the things she can control, she's seeing the people in her lives. They're seeing her and how different she is. Mm-hmm. And she's seeing them and she's going, oh man, I wish you could get some of what I'm getting.
Yeah. And there's a part of it, like it's a nice intention, right? Like it's a nice thought. She wants them to have what she has. I think actually that's the part that hurts the most sometimes is that you want someone that you care about to experience what you've experienced.
Totally.
And maybe they're not ready for it or open to it or willing.
Well, yeah. And that's what I see a lot in friends and clients in relationships.
Yeah.
When one person is going through that, they're like, oh God, I wish my partner would go to therapy because then they would realize this. And then because I'm trying to show them and they won't. Now we're fighting them.
It becomes like a whole separate issue. Like now that's part of the presenting problem is that they're so frustrated with their partner or whoever for not joining them in this growth, you know, in this experience.
Right. It's something Sarah and I have talked about. I've named it for her before and we mentioned it in this session. I don't know if you caught it or you know what that means, but I call it the Scooby-Doo effect.
Oh, I caught it, Doug, because I wanted to be like, how the fuck do you think of these things? Like Scooby-Doo. Wow. I would have never, ever. Am I going to say the M word? Maybe it's because I'm millennial, but like I would, I would not have gone to Scooby-Doo for what she is saying, right? Because she's like, I feel tired all the time now. Is that normal? Like now that I'm shedding some of my anxieties and all of this and, the, you know, my trauma responses, like I'm exhausted.
Okay. So here's part of how I work. Like I'm looking for the analogy to make it less clinical, more relatable and understandable. We can throw the clinical into it, but I want to give it something. And usually it's something objective. That's why I'll use an analogy. And there are a ton that I could use. I mean, I'm thinking about an athlete during the off season, finally realizing how much their body hurts, right? Something I think we can all relate to, even if you're not an athlete. It's just getting through a period of time and being able to stop and take stock of what you just did or what you just went through.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So Scooby-Doo just, that popped into my head because the visual is right there.
It's the visual. Right? Yeah, that makes sense. And it's something I just didn't have in my memory
But you can picture like Scooby and Shaggy like getting scared and taking off and their shells are still there while the rest of them runs away.
Yeah.
And then it catches up at some point.
It's humorous. It's fun to think about. Yeah.
And that's, again, why I do it is because she'll remember, and now you will too, me saying, well, it's like the Scooby-Doo effect.
Yeah. Go, now it actually sounds like Scooby-Doo effect, TM. Like it sounds like a real
thing. It means something.
Thing.
Right. Yeah, I don't think I can trademark Scooby-Doo. I think Scooby-Doo
probably not. Yeah, you're right. That would be too much.
But that's absolutely it. And it's that idea, which I was saying, that catch-up effect is her system has been in fight or flight for so long that now that she's finally shedding that and she's finally able to calm down, like I said to her, I think a session ago, can you see how maybe at some point you could start to meditate?
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. Is there a world in which you try and meditate?
Right.
Like, is that a thing yet?
Right. Which again, I wasn't telling her to meditate. I wasn't asking her about
that. You were wondering.
And just by wondering and throwing that out there in that way, it's helping this thing right now, the Scooby-Doo effect, that catch up of, I can see how I'm not just in fight or flight, like all the time, every second. And maybe I can. And now I see all my siblings around me and, oh, they're still in it. I can recognize that's what I used to look like.
Right.
That's what they still.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Right.
That looks exhausting.
Right.
Yeah.
Right?
And that's that empathy again. Like you feel for them. You almost don't want that for them. Like, God, I just wish that they would relax a little bit. Right. But she's shedding some of that adrenaline from the and the cortisol from the fight or flight.
Totally.
It's like a post marathon where you finally get to rest for like a month, you know?
You know, what's funny about that, like I've gone on camping trips where I will just be going.
Mm-hmm.
And the point is to get to wherever the next spot is where we're going to pitch the tent and post up. And I forget sometimes to look around at where I am because it's gorgeous.
Right. Just take it all in.
Right. I mean, it's the journey, not the destination. It's stop and smell the roses. It's, you know, be there for whatever is there.
Be here now.
What?
Be here now.
What does that mean?
Oh, please. Please. I know you probably have that book somewhere.
somewhere, but I think that's like a, I don't know, a mushroom psychedelic.
Is it? Riddled. I thought it was just Ram Dass.
It is Ram Dass.
And did he do a bunch of psychedelics?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah, of course. I mean, duh. I should have known that, but.
I mean, no knock on Ram Dass at all. He was an amazing.
Definitely not.
Was. He passed away a few years ago, but an amazing spiritual leader and teacher and guru and psychologist and all these things. And that Be Here Now. Yeah, that idea is great.
Yeah, like, it's absolutely a reminder.
That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, stop and smell the roses.
Yep.
There's actually a lot of goodness happening around too in the small things. I think that's kind of what she's realizing too. Like she's able to take it all in a little bit more.
I mean, I brought it back to something I haven't talked to her about much at all, which is her relationship.
Yeah, I know. That was interesting to me because we don't hear about him a lot. And I was really curious to hear about it. As I said, I think in the beginning, I focus a lot on relationships. I mean, maybe because I'm a marriage and family therapist, but, you know, I go to the relationships that people have. And yeah, I am curious because we don't hear about it a lot. So yeah, I wonder how it's affecting
them. Well, we've talked about their relationship in the past. And some of what she said to me is... He's kind of the calmer one.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she'll kind of like run around. And I have said things to her like, wouldn't it be nice if he could just draw you a bath and you could just take a bath and relax? Oh, yeah. Right. And I think in that particular session, she's like, yeah, but he'd probably do it wrong or the water wouldn't be right or this and that. I'll just do it myself.
Oh my gosh.
Like,
yes. Yes.
Right. So trying to get her to calm down, she's mentioning how her sisters see her now and how her kids are seeing her now. And I'm wondering, how does your partner see you? How is that interaction any different now that you're being different or you're feeling different, you're feeling calmer?
Mm-hmm.
When I was looking at, can you use him to kind of be that source of calm? I'll throw my arms around you. I'll draw you the bath. I'll be the calm.
Mm-hmm.
And it was something where she said she would try to make him join her in her stress bubble.
That's what I tagged as well. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because it's interesting. I mean, I think a lot of us do that because we're like, okay, if I'm really stressed out right now, like everyone else needs to be stressed out with me or else like, am I being invalidated or am I crazy? Am I not right? Like join me in this. It's kind of like misery loves company. I mean, we kind of want people to join us in those feelings. And now saying like, oh yeah, now I've kind of calmed down a little bit and I don't really expect that from him anymore. And it's almost like we balance each other, complement each other.
It's interesting because couples are very, very different from one to the next and even the same one from day to the next, right?
Right, yeah.
That idea of misery loves company, I want them to join me in this. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, yes, you want someone to say, oh God, that sucks. Oh yeah, that's horrible. Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Other times, you're looking to them to have something different. You know, if you're feeling a certain way, you want some reassurance. Like,
Everything's
you might be super anxious and you're like, I don't want a partner that's anxious. I want them to reassure
me. That's true. That's true.
Right? See?
I mean, you're right. Cause as you're saying that, I'm like, wait a minute. Yeah. I don't want my partner to be anxious when I'm anxious. Right. I want him to be the rock. Right. Like, be steady for me.
But if he's always steady, then does that mean I have to show him that I'm always this way and he's always that way?
Right. Or are these our roles? Yeah.
Right. What if my rock isn't feeling like a rock, but is projecting being like a rock? Or, you know, can we be the rock for each other? Can we alternate? And it's, I don't know. It's just kind of going with what do you need at that particular time?
Yeah, exactly.
And can you verbalize that's what you need? And then maybe in therapy, look at why you need that.
Right. But for Sarah, I think that's the most important thing, even going back to like her kids with the natural consequences and then with, you know, telling her kids how work actually was, like how her day really was. It's for her, it's important to just be able to express her emotions, even if it's just one sentence, but just answering somebody truthfully and being a little more vulnerable with herself and her feelings.
Yeah.
And letting people respond the way that they can or want to.
And all of this for her is still fairly new. She's just learning how to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's experiencing it as she's going and seeing how people are responding to her. It goes differently sometimes. It goes great sometimes. It's really just owning where you are at any particular moment and being able to verbalize it without fear of, am I going to put somebody out, put them off? Am I going to get judged? Am I going to feel embarrassed? Like,
am I going to get beaten?
Right.
Yeah.
For her, absolutely. Yeah. That was her reality for sure.
It's scary. And I think the very subtle exposure therapy of it all, almost, right? Like her just trying something different by saying to her kids, like, oh, work was bad, you know, like I'm happy to be home, or just telling her partner, like, this is how I feel right now. It's a little of that exposure of like, okay, I'm not going to get beaten. I'm not going to be ridiculed or, you know, anything negative. Nothing negative is going to happen to me just because I feel a feeling and I share it with somebody.
Yep.
She's relearning that.
I love that. And that's something that I think she's just starting to experience is, can I say something and not worry about, was this right or wrong?
Right. There's no right or wrong. It's just, this is how I feel.
Right. Because she's constantly looking for, how do I correct something? How do I eradicate this behavior to not get in trouble, to not get beaten, to not have a consequence? And it's going, right, but can you actually have your experience?
Right.
And can you recognize that, like I said, it's not about correcting, it's not about right or wrong, and you're not going to get traumatized right now. Can we calm our systems and let that Scooby-Doo catch-up happen, right?
Right, right. And in the spirit of mindfulness too, and being here now, right? It's also realizing, I think eventually we do realize these feelings don't last. Like they do come and go.
Right.
And yeah, you'll have the same one sometimes. There are patterns sometimes, but generally speaking, like our feelings are going to come and go. They're all temporary. So to just feel it, let it flow through you.
Yeah, I loved for her to, well, for me, actually, when she said.
Yeah, we get something out of therapy, too. Well, for sure.
Right. Well, it was validating for me. I mean, I know I'm okay with this. And yet hearing her say, you know, when you tell me those stories that you tell me, those are some of the, my biggest light bulb moments.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
I love that because that's, oh, cool. The what we're doing and how we're doing it is working for her.
Yeah. Oh, it's the best feeling as a therapist to get that kind of feedback, especially when it's unprompted, right? Like she just said, Doug, when you tell me those stories, and I remember in a previous podcast episode where I was like, how do you just go off on tangents about stories, right? Like, what if you're taking away from like the goal here? And I quickly realized, oh no, these stories can really lead to some big aha moments, as Sarah says, like, because she can exit, you know, her life and look at it objectively and make those connections.
Right.
And she does that again here, right? With the beautiful and love, right?
Oh,
and the
story
that is just, I mean, I don't know how you do it, Doug. You have so many movie moments with so many of your clients from the past. And I'm like, is he making these up? They're too good. They're really too good. But, you know, the little girl with the crack in the wall and covering it up. And, you know, what really hit me was the, I think we talked about this last time too, like calling her trauma response her superpower, calling it a strength really resonated with her. And I think it's just another example of why showing somebody else's story and their version of it can help you make those connections.
Another great line is, where the wound is, that's where the light comes in. And that's exactly where the story comes from that I told her. It was literally right after she said, I love hearing these stories because it's a light bulb and it makes me think of something. And like, oh, great. And this was absolutely a real story. It did happen.
I believe you.
You know, it was a 15-year-old kid. And I remember her. I remember the drawing. I remember buying the frame for her.
Wow.
I don't remember. I mean, I might have conflated like a few things in it.
Sure. Right? Memory's not perfect.
No, right? But I remember the gist of it. And the reason I tell this story, and I remember some parts of it in detail, very clearly.
Yeah.
Because it made such an impression on me. And it was such an amazing thing to happen. And sure, movie moments. Yeah, my life is my movie. Absolutely. And I remember these moments very clearly. So to share this with her, it feels very real. It is objective, not subjective, like you said, so she can see it. And when you're doing that, when you're hearing something objectively, you can apply it to yourself subjectively later or in the moment. And she absolutely got it. And it's something that this story in particular is something about allowing your trauma to exist and not hiding it.
Right. And
being able to integrate it as part of yourself, which she and I have been talking about and continue to talk about.
She's really owning her trauma history. You know, that's kind of the main thing that I took from this. And it's interesting because at first I kind of cringe at that quote, like, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Because I'm like, well, what doesn't kill you makes you really hurt. Like, right. It's going to leave a scar, you know, like it's certainly going to make you feel weak for a little while, right? Like it takes a lot out of you. So it almost veers into like that, you know, quote unquote toxic positivity, or it can. It kind of shows that it is so unique to the individual because she resonates with this so much, turning her trauma responses into superpowers and like her strengths. So I think maybe for one client, that would feel really good and empowering, right? And then to another client, it might feel like, oh, God, no, my trauma fucked me up. Like, I don't want to own it as a superpower. Like, no, it almost killed me or whatever.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And
both things are valid. Yeah, and it doesn't mean you're going to move from one to the other. It might just be one is what that would. And she even said like, oh, yeah, I didn't like the word trauma survivor when you said that to me. And now I own that. And now my trauma did play a huge part in shaping me and who I am and some of my strengths. Great. Yeah. That's why this story fits for her. And why I'm like, oh, cool.
Yeah.
I can't make this stuff up in the moment.
You're not that creative.
No. Well, maybe. Am I? No.
You could be.
Knowing that that's going to resonate with her and it's highlighting something for her, it's a story that she gets to then take on.
And
she'll remember.
Oh, yeah. It'll
and come she up. Can actually apply it to herself and see it in the people around her.
Yeah. And it simultaneously also shows her that she's not alone and that people all over the world are experiencing things, you know, traumas, and they're surviving and they're integrating it into their story and even rewriting the narrative, right, a little bit.
Well, and a lot of people have listened to this podcast and have heard Sarah's story and her journey. Some have had similar experiences. Some have not, but they've had traumatic experiences.
Yeah, exactly.
And some just go, oh, wow, that resonates with me because of this.
You can take the pieces that resonate and like kind of filter out the rest, but it's how we learn through storytelling, right? We take what we relate to and leave the rest.
That's exactly the salad bar approach that was taught to me.
Oh yes, right? Have you mentioned this before? Because that sounds familiar. That's the art of it, is knowing when the analogy applies, like in that specific session or with that person. I think that's really the art and craft of it all, right? Is like knowing when to pull it out.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's one of my superpowers. And maybe that was even at some point one of my defenses, is that I'm always looking for how this relates to something, or, this is like this. Oh, this is like that. You know, I think in analogies, I think in things that I can relate to. And it happens also where I will go, oh, I haven't heard of that. Tell me about that. I'm hearing something for the first time, but my brain is trying to make sense of it.
Yeah.
And think of what's similar to me.
Right. So that's your version of making sense of something, is to think of something similar and something that's creative too. I mean, you're obviously innately creative, so that's going to resonate with you as storytelling and just, analogies, and something you saw in a movie or a TV show can be hugely symbolic for something in therapy.
Probably not something I read in a book, because I don't really read anymore.
But at one point.
At one point I did.
Probably.
And then my eyes got all messed up.
What about the missing piece?
Well, yeah, but there's like three words on a page. That I can get
it's
with.
It's still a book, Doug. It's still a book.
That's true. Which I think Amazon reminds me I've purchased like 22 times because I keep giving them out to people.
Don't get me started on Amazon. Last thing here that I had was what I thought was really signifying her autonomy that she is really starting to own, is that she corrects herself again and said, like, I did what you suggested, not what you told me to do.
Right.
That is like, ooh, I'm doing chef's kiss, because I'm just like, that is literally, I mean, maybe I'm taking it too far here, but I see her just like middle finger up to Berg, right? And just saying like, fuck you, I'm not doing what you're telling me to do anymore. Right. Like, I am doing it because it actually sounded like a good idea and I wanted to do it.
Right.
Beautiful.
I love that. Yeah, she does that quite a bit now. Which is awesome, because she will seemingly look to me as, please give me the advice or the guidance. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm doing it from her, not for her, but from her.
Ooh, that's a cool distinction. Yeah.
Thank you. And she's the one that's going, oh, right, I'm using this and I'm making my, I am the one doing, you're right. It's building her autonomy. It's not just somebody's telling me to do this, so I'm doing it, which is why, you know, several times with her, I have said, and I've said to you, Kenzie, like, I'm not just telling her to do this, like the pop quiz thing. I'm not just doing this so she'll give me the answer. I will ask her, well, hey, can we give you permission to do this? Can we see if you can try this? And that's where she said, right, you didn't tell me to do this. You just pointed me in the direction and I went with it. Awesome.
So simple. I guess I just love that she explicitly like says it to you, right? The fact that once again, just proving the kind of safety in the rapport that you two have built together in this type of therapy that you are doing. It's a real relationship where she feels secure and safe and can say, yeah, I'm not doing this because of you. Right. This is about me.
And some people will say, oh, well, you're just being the secure attachment for her. Yes, I am.
Right.
And by virtue of that, I'm showing her what it's like to be the other half of the secure attachment.
Right. That safety net. Yeah. Right.
This relationship with therapist and client takes two of us.
Yes. It takes two to tango in therapy.
That's right. But it only takes one to break dance.
Wow, you're right. Everyone, you should really see what Doug is doing right now. He's on the floor. It's really impressive.
Right?
I learn new things about you every time.
And on that note, we will keep popping and locking and unlocking things for you.
Dear Lord.
So we will be back.
Really breaking it down.
Breaking it down, popping and locking and
dropping and all of it.
All of it. All of it for you. If you have some questions about our moves or not, or your moves, and tell us about it, email us at info@yourmentalbreakdown.com. Find us, follow us, rate us.
Google us, Bing us.
Bing us.
Yahoo us.
Yahoo us. Oh, wait, there was one more, isn't there?
Tumblr us.
Tumblr us?
WordPress us. Substack, Discord us. I'm just going to name all of the social medias that I know.
Wow, yeah, you're going off.
Thank you.
You got me covered.
Thank you. Wow, am I winning now?
You are, not that it's about winning and losing, but you are winning and you are losing.
I got to do right by my millennials, you know. I got to represent.
Represent us, because we are out.
Bye.
Bye.